Hey everybody, and welcome to the live Nonprofit Pro webinar, Fundraising Acquisition, How to Grow Your List and Engage New Supporters, sponsored by Salsa Labs. I'm Sean Norris, Executive Editor for Nonprofit Pro and the host of today's event. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. Here today to discuss fundraising acquisition, we have Pamela Barton, owner, PJ Barton, Inc., and David Gunn, political account manager for Salsa Labs. Here's a little background on our presenters. Pamela Barton consults with nonprofits in the United States and internationally, helping them develop their fundraising strategy and write copy to achieve their goals. She also teaches fundraising at two universities, hoping to inspire the next generation of fundraisers to be passionate about the profession. Previously, Pamela led the fundraising programs for nonprofit organizations, getting hands-on experience in everything from direct mail to DRTV and major gift solicitation to event management. David Gunn is the political account manager for Salsa Labs. He has spent the last 3 years helping nonprofit and progressive political clients streamline their supporter lists and get the most out of their online fundraising and engagement strategy. Prior to his time at Salsa, David spent 8 years working as a development officer for organizations including the Austin Film Festival, Junior Achievement of Central Texas, and Emancipet. With that, I'm going to hand it off to Pamela.
Thank you very much, Sean. Just to give you an idea, I'm going to show you on our screen right now what you'll learn in this next hour that we have in front of us. We're going to talk about setting realistic expectations for acquisition, giving donors what they want so they become donors that stay, how to keep those new donors, and 10-ish tips for reaching new donors. So I'm going to jump right in now and start talking to you about, first of all, growing your list, which is what the whole purpose of this webinar is. How do we get these new supporters? We hear a lot today about the importance of growing your list. But let's just be honest and get that one reality out there, the 6,000-pound gorilla. It is expensive. You're going to have to spend money to raise money, and you're definitely going to have to spend money to acquire and retain donors. And, yes, that can be a real roadblock to doing acquisition. You know you need to acquire new donors, but decisions may be made by others based on the bottom line, what's this going to do to our overhead rate. And as a result, you may find yourself in trouble in terms of growing your list. So how on earth are you going to convince your management and your board of directors that this investment is worthwhile for your organization to make? Another problem with growing your list is that it's hard work. Donors very seldom are looking for you. They don't wake up in the morning and say, "I need to save the earth today." Or today I need to sponsor a child. Even if they have a philanthropic heart, the reality is donors have a limited amount of disposable income, and they are not necessarily thinking that the best thing they can do with a share of it is give it to your organization. We're up against all kinds of things that are claiming our donors' attention. A third problem is that you're probably going to fail as often as you succeed in acquisition. We are always looking for what works in acquisition, but the only way we're going to find that out is to do a lot of things that don't work. So we have a difficult case to make to our board and our executive team that we really do need to invest in acquisition strategies. And finally, in terms of acquisition, it's absolutely essential. It may seem like everything is just fine today. Your bottom line is stronger than it would have been if you had wasted your money on acquisition. But the reality is you're going to pay for that decision 2 years, 5 years from now because your list is going to be smaller. The donors you didn't acquire today will not be giving to you in a year or two. You're not going to have a new group of donors to be cultivating, perhaps eventually even into major donors or planned giving donors. So you have to ask the question of yourself, how on earth do I make a case for acquisition? First of all, you need to decide what your funnel looks like. By funnel, I am talking about the amount of donors coming onto your list versus the amount of donors leaving for whatever reason. Attrition is a fact of life in fundraising. Donors are going to stop giving to your list for a variety of reasons. Some of them will die, and other than perhaps a bequest, you will not receive further gifts from them. Others will lose interest, some will go on a fixed income and no longer have disposable money, and still others will move away, and especially if you're a local organization, lose a connection to you, not feel that connection anymore. What we're seeing in the statistics these days is that, unfortunately, a lot of organizations have a funnel that looks like the one you're seeing on the right side of your screen. They're gaining fewer new donors, fewer donors are coming in, then they're losing out the bottom of this wide funnel. More donors fall out than are poured in, and the net result is you have fewer donors at the end of the year than you did at the beginning. We have a poll up on the screen right now, and I ask you to real quickly just answer the question, do you know what your attrition rate is? And while you're doing that, I'll continue. Remember that some of the donors that come in are not a result of any real effort that you're doing. They just come in by chance. They find you on the web. Someone tells them about you. They see a banner ad or whatever. But without deliberate acquisition efforts, you're going to have the funnel on the right when what we want is the funnel on the left. Adding more donors constantly gives us the opportunity to do more as an organization, and we can increase our programming and do so much more. So now let's take a look at it. We've got about 1 in 4, 1 in 5 who know their attrition rate, another half that don't, and a third that aren't sure. So we're going to talk more about that, and I won't be able to talk to you right now about how you can calculate your attrition rate, but we can do that offline if you would like. So some of the things you have to do is to make a case for acquisition, because you may know as a fundraiser that it's 100% vital for your organization. You know that without acquisition, you may as well go home and call it a day. But just knowing that fact and just won't make the funds appear in your budget to do acquisition. So to start out, you have to do your homework. First, you're going to have to figure out what is the lifetime value of a new donor, or it may be long-term donor if your records are suspect before a certain time. That's often the case, so don't feel bad about it. You want to look at the lifetime value or the long-term value back 5 years, 10 years, as many years as you can go back with confidence. And you want to be asking, what is a donor acquired at that year worth now on average? Yes, some of them only gave to you one time, but others have continued to give over and over. So take a look at what on average that donor is worth to you now, because that's a strong motivator for bringing more donors in. Also, what sources have the best lifetime value? You'll often find that one source or another has a lower lifetime value, but another source has the best, you'll often find that one source or another has that lower lifetime value, but it's bringing in more donors. And sometimes, frankly, that's a source you can't control. So you have to figure out what sources that you can control, not just bike mail or gifts that come in over the transom, but of the sources you can control, what ones are giving you the best lifetime value and what ones are bringing in more donors, and then you make judgment calls if you're looking for quantity versus quality. Strategically, you may want to continue an activity or invest more in an activity with a lesser lifetime value because of the quantity of donors it's bringing in, but then you need to look at your back end and figure out how you can retain more of those donors. We'll chat about that in a little bit. And you should also determine what sources have the best retention rate. Some sources for new donors operate a bit like a revolving door. People come in and they're out just as quickly as they come in with one gift. So you need to consistently be looking at those sources and see where the retention rates are by source. But at the same time, you don't want to overlook these easier ways to low-cost ways to get donors in. First of all, a great way to get new donors is to ask for referrals. People who love your organization often have friends who also love your organization, and you can ask them to share the names of people who might want to learn more about your organization. I'm a huge proponent of requesting referrals, but I'm also a huge proponent of telling your donors how you're going to use the names they provide. I don't want to give out my friend's name and have them exploit it, so the next time I see them, they yell at me and say, "Thanks a lot for sharing my name." Instead, I will tell my donors exactly what we're going to do. For example, we will send one letter or one email, just one contact, to tell them about our program and invite them to give. We will not mention your name. If the person does not choose to give, we will not contact them again. Now, some of you might be thinking, oh, how can we throw that name away? But you want your donors to feel very good about giving you referral names, so they do it regularly. I can't tell you anything scientifically, but I do know that in one program, for example, 1 in 10 of those referral names became donors. That's a 10% response rate, and it was essentially free acquisition. Another thing you don't want to overlook is inquiries. People often inquire and want information about your organization, so look at what's being sent out to them. Is it not only informative, but also motivational? Will it make them want to become donors to your organization? Have you made it easy for them if they want to donate? Do you enclose a return envelope, or for an email inquiry, have a link to your webpage? Do you mention in the response you send the importance of donations? Take a look at what's going out to your inquiries and make sure you're giving them information that could motivate them to make a donation. Also look at your prospects. People who don't necessarily approach your organization, but attend events or participate in a community activity or stop by your booth at an outdoor event to pick up information, etc. What are you giving to those people that might encourage them to make a donation? When they pick up your information and read what you put into their hands, is it the kind of information that's going to make them say, yes, I do want to give, or at least look into this organization? Think about also your website visitors. This gets said over and over, but I still go on websites for nonprofit organizations, and it's almost impossible to figure out where on earth I can make a donation. The website design is so beautiful, so color coordinated, so branded, but it doesn't have a place on it that's shouting, hello, please donate now, because that might mess up the overall design. And I understand your website has to do a lot of work for your organization and keep everybody happy, but don't sacrifice its fundraising potential. Make sure it's easy to donate and easy to figure out what the donation will accomplish. Try to view your website not as someone entrenched in your organization, but as a person who might actually come to your website as a visitor. What's their total experience? And then you want to think in acquisition, what's your best offer? Your best offer may not be the same as your best offer for cultivation, major gifts, or other areas. It needs to be simple to understand. This is not the time to educate people on the importance of some deep technological concept that your organization is working on. You're going to people who know very little, if anything, about your organization, so you want to give them an offer that tells them very simply what you do and why you do it. It also needs to be very easy to visualize. People must immediately be able to form a mental picture of whatever it is you do. If we get complicated, it may be too difficult for the average person who knows nothing about your organization to understand, and you'll lose them. Your offer also needs to be time sensitive. When does this need to be done? If it's something you can do in the next 5 years, the donor may think, great, I'll give you a gift in the next 5 years, probably. You have to have some urgency, not dishonesty, about why you need to get this done today, why you need their gift today. Finally, the last question is, what is the price point that makes sense? We need to feed, for example, we need to feed an additional 100 hungry people this holiday season, and we can do that for $3 a person. Okay, that's a great deal. Or we can do that for $50 a person. Well, now you may need to explain some more. Make sure your price point is logical in the mind of a donor. If it's too low, potential donors may question if you really can do what you say you can do for that amount. It just has to make sense to the potential donor. Bottom line, always remember that you are not the target audience. How does this offer sound to the target audience, people who don't know anything about your organization? And remember, donors are asking, will I address my goals and objectives through this charity's program? That means you need to be talking about the donor. You need to talk about their concerns. It's not all about the organization. We need to do this. We need to do that. We can do this. We can accomplish that. We do a great job. Oh, by the way, please give us money so we can keep doing our work. Instead, turn it around and think about the donor. How will they address their own goals and objectives by giving to your organization? And also, to get the gift, remember to give them a realistic deadline, sometimes sensitivity. You may also want to ask more than once. If you send out a letter or an email with permission, if you've rented the name, follow that up with another one that it's a final chance. This is especially effective if you're doing something that corresponds to a specific event, for example, feeding hungry people at Thanksgiving. Make sure it's easy to give online and offline. Some will say, well, our donors don't give online, or our donors don't give offline. They only give online. But the reality is people are doing both. So make sure on both ends it's easy to give. And if you're using multiple methods, multiple voices, for example, lift notes, banner ads, using celebrities or endorsers, make sure that the overall message is consistent and that it reminds people what their gift is going to do. When you're working on an acquisition letter, you need to love your control. That's the package that works over and over. If it's still timely, not totally out of date, yes, mail it again. We can get really bored with our own fundraising. Oh, we did that last year. We're tired of it. But remember, your prospects don't keep them all in a file and look at them at quarterly meetings and that kind of thing. So if something's working in your acquisition program, reuse it. Secondly, test a variety of outer envelopes with the same package content. This is a very inexpensive test. You write your letter, you have the guts of the mailing, it's the best you know it can be, and then you test three or four different outer envelopes, because if people don't open the envelope, it really doesn't matter what's inside. In your initial testing, figure out what envelope is going to get the best results. And this, as I said, is fairly inexpensive. And if you use premiums, consider a continuity premium. And by this I mean offer a small premium for the first gift, but then when you receipt them and thank them for their gift, you can say something like, we're so grateful for your gift, and if you give again in 60 days or 30 days, 90 days, whatever, we will send you, and basically it'll be a companion to the first gift. Online, make sure you match the promise in the email on the landing page. What did you say in your email? And when they get to the landing page, make sure they hear that message again. If there's a disconnect, it's going to be very difficult for your donors. It's jarring, and you have a higher likelihood of losing them. Also, ask only for the information you need. We have an urge to get all the information we might ever need about the donor. But the more you ask them for, the more likely they're going to bail. So keep it down to the information you need. You can always go back later once they have begun a relationship and have some commitment to you and get that additional information. And finally, offer content that's worth getting. If you're going to offer them content online in exchange for a donation, make sure it's something they're really going to want to get. And remember, overall retention rate of first-time donors is about 1 in 4. So let's talk a little bit about how we're going to keep those donors, since after all, we spent a lot of money to get them. So the first question is, when do you start thinking about donor retention? And the answer is before you acquire the donor. You might say, what you don't want to say is, wow, 6 months ago we acquired a bunch of donors. Now what do we do? You have to have that plan in place the minute the donor So the minute the donor sends the first gift in, you have them in a donor retention framework. And that really gets down to the question, how hungry are you? How much do you need those donors to stick with you? I'm assuming you're in this business and listening to this webinar because you're hungry. You want your donors to stick. So what are you going to do to keep those donors? Well, to increase the likelihood of keeping that donor, thank every first-time donor, even if they send in $5. When you thank them for that donation, recognize that they're new and acknowledge what they gave to. Your online thank you, the one that goes out immediately, may need to be warmed up. This is one of the most wasted opportunities in fundraising, I think, because too often they are very clinical. They sound like they're written by an accountant. They certainly meet IRS requirements, but they're just not warm and fuzzy. So put some text in there that makes people feel really good about giving the gift and assure them they made a really wise decision. And remember to say thank you more than once. Send out the receipt, of course, but in your first letter to these new donors, you may include another thank you and a reminder of the importance of giving again. Ask for that second donation, but also be very thankful. Let your donors know how much you appreciate them. And keep your wording consistent. They may not realize that they, quote, joined the family or became a member because that language wasn't used. So be careful that you don't start talking to them like they did something that maybe they're not sure they did, because that can be very off-putting. And also be very strategic. Don't leave it to chance. You need to have a plan for how you're going to get that second gift. What's the critical time frame for getting that second gift? It may be that if you don't get a second gift in 60 days or 90 days, statistically you're never going to get a second gift unless you're an annual membership organization. But if you lack that trigger, you need to ask what's the critical time frame and then pull out all the stops during that critical time frame to increase the likelihood that the donor will give again. Make sure you're responding quickly, both with sending out a receipt and offering more information. A welcome series, either online or offline, is a great way to increase second gift conversion. Online is great. Send a series of 3 or 4 emails that introduce them to your organization. Have some heartfelt stories. Minimize confusion. Don't throw out a lot of terms or technical jargon. If they gave to a hunger appeal, for example, even if you do other things, talk about hunger initially. And finally, don't be afraid to be vulnerable. If after a certain amount of time a donor hasn't given a second gift, you might consider communication to them that's where you basically say, wow, we were really excited when we got your first gift, but now we haven't heard from you in 6 months. That concerns me, as we really need the support of caring people like you to continue the work that we do and that you helped make possible with your first gift. But don't be afraid to let the donor know how much they mean to your organization. And make sure your online email experience is owned by one person with solid fundraising experience. You have to have some form of a gatekeeper here. I gave to one organization, and over the course of the year, I received 2 to 4 emails a week from them. Everybody was just sending out email because it was cheap, but no one considered the impact on the donor. So make sure there's one person who understands fundraising that owns an experience and can make sure the donors are having a positive experience with your email and not feeling bombarded. Finally, measure every contact with your first one-time donor, and when it's no longer profitable, it's likely time to quit mailing to that one-time donor. Send that donor acquisition from time to time, but don't spend all the money your newly acquired donor gave to your organization to try and keep them when they're clearly indicating they're not going to give again. So I will now turn it over to David and let him continue, and thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you so much for that, Pamela. I am going to bounce through here a couple of these quick slides introducing myself. Again, I am the political accounts manager as well as the enterprise accounts manager here at Salsa Labs. And I'm going to be talking through a couple quick questions here on the area of list growth techniques. I've started out really focusing on the top 10 tips for growing your list and engaging your new supporters. But as I began to build this proposal out, I realized I couldn't just cut it down to 10. So with my apologies, I've increased it to about 10, 12-ish tips to really help you get the most out of your fundraising experience and engaging your supporters most effectively. I am going to turn it over really quickly to another poll. Just out of curiosity, I wanted to find out how many of you are currently using any kind of online engagement platform. And by that, I mean tools that are beyond just a simple donation form, something that actually tracks your supporters, whether that's Salsa, whether that's DonorPerfect, it may be something like Razor's Edge or Luminate. Are any of you guys using something like that at all? And I'm going to be gathering some information here from you to kind of guide where I go from here. But it's really critical if you're not using something on the back end to start doing so immediately, because a lot of what I'm talking here about today is going to revolve around getting the most out of the data you already have, being able to take your data, measure it, and move it forward in a strategic fashion. If you don't have a database in place at all, you're really missing out on some longer-term trend measurability. However, looking through the results of this poll, it looks like of those of you who have responded, at least almost two-thirds of you already have some sort of online engagement platform. So that's a good place to start. If you don't have one yet, I definitely recommend looking at them. I am partial to Salsa myself, but there are other great ones out there that can really help you get to that next stage of advocacy and fundraising and organizing that is really, really critical to a long-term success of an organization. So the first step that I really want to highlight, first big tip that I think everyone should be looking at, is the social media aspect of your aggregation. You want to look at including some sort of social sharing option on every web page and in every email you're sending out to your list. Make sure that landing pages when people come to your site has a spot to sign up for email, has a spot to sign up for your Facebook page, has a spot to engage with you. You'll see here a great example from one of our clients, Women Action in the Media. On this page alone, I can see a join our email list up top. I can see an opportunity to follow them on Twitter, an opportunity to subscribe to their RSS feeds, a Tumblr page, a Pinterest page, a support us link. And this is all on their email sign-up form. So there's a lot of different ways for you to engage with this organization, but it's really, really critical to start that process early, making sure that you give them options so that they can engage with you in the way they feel most comfortable. Next, I want to talk a little bit about social media ambassadors. Now, this is not just having the links on your page or maintaining an account yourself. Oftentimes, organizations, especially smaller ones with limited staff, aren't going to have a full-time social media strategist on staff. It's just not going to happen. No one really has that kind of budget to hire that extra person on a whim. If you do, great. You're probably better suited to be running this webinar than I am. But for the meantime, what I would recommend doing is reach out to the members of your staff and your supporters who are already invested in your mission and get them to use social media on your behalf. I will recommend that if you're doing this, you give them suggested posts, you give them links to tag URLs through Bitly or TinyURL that you can use for tracking, because you do want to give them the ability to send these messages on your behalf, but you don't want to give them the keys to the kingdom. You want to make sure that you have some control over your messaging. This is something that we do here at Salsa ourselves. Even in advance of this webinar, our marketing team was giving me some suggested posts. I was sharing it on my Facebook feed. I was sharing it on Twitter. It gives me the opportunity to share to my network in addition to the company's network and really get the information out there as broadly as possible. But again, there's some centralized control. There is some control over the message. There's some control over the URL that I'm being sent out so that at the end of the day, we can measure the effectiveness of what we're doing. Also, if you have the capability, I would recommend including after your sign-up pages, and that's an email sign-up page, that is a donation sign-up page, that is an advocacy action sign-up page, even an event sign-up page. After it's over, you should include the ability to include a tell-a-friend page. Now, this is different from social sharing. This isn't simply clicking on a link and pushing to Facebook. This is a link where you can actually input the email addresses of your friends and family and give them a pre-written message or editing a message yourself so that you can personalize it and letting them know. You're getting this message in their inbox. It's one more way of reaching out. Again, it's leveraging that network effect. You're going to be doing a lot to take advantage of the existing supporters you have and encouraging them to spread out to their own social networks. so that you can get the message out even further at little extra cost to yourself. You also want to build out timed reminders on your email blasts, excuse me, not your email blasts, on your donation pages, on your advocacy pages, on your sign-up pages. And this is different from an automated thank you page. Many of you, even without a true online donor database, if you're doing any kind of online fundraising, any kind of online list sign-up, you've probably got a quick thank you page that auto-generates as soon as somebody takes your action, signs up, or what have you. You may also have the ability to build out an autoresponder where immediately after they take that action, they are given an email that says, thank you so much. Here is your confirmation letter. Here is your tax deductible receipt. Here is a quick thank you letter that we've done as a form letter and sent you immediately. That's great. I don't want to discount that, and I do think it's very necessary. But you want to look at also including timed triggers, emails that come out a certain amount of time after the initial action has taken place. So, for example, here in Salsa, this is how you would set something like that up. After editing a donation page, you already have a reply email that you've built out that says, thank you for donating. But you want to actually send in another message that you can build out and say, send this message out a set number of time of hours or days later, so that after they get that first message for you, they don't just forget about you. They get another message a couple days later that just says something as simple as, hey, I just wanted to say thank you again for the gift you gave last week. Your donation is already going to do so much good for our organization, and we truly appreciate it. You may want to set up another autoresponder a few days after that, maybe another time trigger that comes out and says, hey, wanted to let you know of some of the stuff that we're doing, some of the programs that your donation has supported. This allows you to glue them in as to what's going on, give them a sense of investment in your organization, and make sure they're in it for the long haul. If you've got a donor that is giving you money for the first time, you want them to feel welcome. You want them to feel ownership in what they're doing and make sure that down the line they turn into a repeat donor. So things that you can consider doing here in these triggered emails are not just a quick thank you, but they're informative. You can use this to say, hey, here are some of our social media accounts. Consider following us on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. Here is some information on upcoming events in your area. Here are some things that you can sign up for on our segmented email list. Tell us what you're interested in. That way, you're getting to know more about them. They're telling you more about themselves. They're feeling more investment in the organization. And after you've had a couple of these touch points, a secondary ask becomes much easier to do. Now you know about them. You know what they're interested in. You know what resonates with them. And you can send them a message that says, hey, I know you mentioned you were interested in topic X. We've got a fundraising appeal that relates to that. I know you've already given this year, but please consider an additional gift of $10 today. Again, sign-up pages. I come back to this a lot, but you want to make sure that every page of your site has some way to engage, even if it's just to receive a newsletter. Make sure there's a link up in your header. Make sure there's something down at the bottom. Make sure that there's an icon somewhere that they can sign up, whether it's for email, whether it's for your Facebook group, some way of engaging. It may seem like a little bit of extra work to do here, especially because the payoff won't be immediate. But once you have these people in your list, you can convert them into a donor later. That's what moves management campaigns are all about. That's what these drip campaigns are about, of engaging over time. The important thing is getting them on your list, giving them as many opportunities as possible, lowering that barrier to entry so that they can come into your list initially and then grow from there. You may also want to consider peer-to-peer fundraising. If it's available in your donor management tool, consider adding it to your page as a test run. If it's not, there are plenty of third-party peer-to-peer groups that you can look at, like GiveZooks, to take a look at just adding it in as a trial run to your overall donation strategy. What's really great about this is you're going to be able to empower your donors to host their own pages, to host their own distributed events, and really take them from being just donors into fundraisers themselves, into ambassadors for your cause. You're going to really take them to that next level. Again, you're going to feel like you're getting they're going to have a bigger stake in the organization itself. Now, here's an example of a page that's done here in Tulsa. There are a couple great things about this page that I like. First of all, they've included a nice image. They have included some copy for Matt in his page here. Some of it was pre-filled by the organization. Some of it was personalized by Matt. And Matt has a clear goal and a clear timeline here. This is an attainable goal. This is something that he's trying to do in 5 days. It's an amount that is going to make a big difference. But it's not like he's saying, hey, I need to raise $5,000 overnight. This is going to be something where Matt can be successful with this. And he can, again, take advantage of the power of his network, share it with his friends and family, get them to donate on behalf of him, and really contribute to the overall organization so that he can become that ambassador, that fundraiser on their behalf. You may also want to look at the idea of getting your offline supporters online. I've noticed in several of the questions that have come on that several of you are currently doing some form of direct mail acquisition or direct mail cultivation. That's great. If you're anything like the organizations I've worked with in the past, you've got plenty of supporters that have given you their contact information and may have donated in the past, but for whatever reason have not given your email address online. Now, I would recommend deduping before you do anything like this, just in case they've come online in some other fashion, especially if you're doing your lists in multiple data silos. For example, if your direct mail list is in a spreadsheet somewhere, but your online donors are in another spreadsheet that you export from PayPal, you want to make sure that you're merging those lists so that you see where the overlap is. But if you find that there isn't a lot of overlap and you've got a ton of supporters that are active that don't have an email address on file for you, consider using a list-to-pin service like FreshAddress. They're a great tool that's out there. They can turn your direct mail list into an email list by running an append on known email addresses associated with those names and addresses. Now, the one thing I will say if you're going to be doing something like this is once you have them in your list, you have to give them a chance to opt out. You've acquired their email address. You're going to be reaching out to them. But that doesn't necessarily mean they want you to be bugging them online. So reach out to them initially, give them a chance to opt into your list. If they tell you they want out, they want out. And at that point, there's not really much more you can do until they want to join your list. Don't force the issue, because the last thing you want to do is have your organization flagged as a spammer, have a high degree of unsubscribes. You want to make sure that you're being as transparent about this process as possible. By the same token, you can look with a lead generation org. People like Care2 or Change.org are awesome for this kind of service. They essentially allow you to create advocacy campaigns online that find people that are like-minded, who are willing to sign your petitions and opt in to your organization. Now, this does typically come with a cost. You're typically going to be paying per acquired email address. So be sure to budget for that accordingly. But once you do have them in the list, again, I must stress the importance of a welcome series, because for a lot of these people, once they sign that petition online and they're added to your database, they may have forgotten that they signed that petition. They may have done it on a whim at work just because they saw a banner ad that they liked. Once they're in, you can't just drop them into your editorial calendar willy-nilly. You've got to give them some sense of welcoming to the list. That may just be as simple as one or two emails that says, hey, here's who we are, here's how you got on our list, here's what we do, and why we think it's important that you stick with us. And then a follow-up email saying, here are some things that we've got coming down the pipeline, here are some ways you can engage, here are some elements of the list that you can subscribe and unsubscribe to, so that you can kind of bring them in slowly, rather than drop them into email 3 out of a 5-email series off of a campaign that you've been running for 2 months already. So be very, very careful with that. If you do that, you're going to really lower your unsubscribe rates from these acquired email addresses, and you're going to really be able to move them up the ladder of engagement much quicker. Now, if those of you who are working with chaptered organizations, really consider leveraging that chapter or affiliate structure. That means if you've got people down below you in the hierarchy that have access to their own lists, let them have a little bit more control. We've seen a lot of success with distributed affiliates managing their own lists and growing their list really substantially. I think that comes down to those organizations and the grassroots level knowing their supporters better than somebody might at the national level. Now, if you're going to do that, I would take advantage of tools that offer some level of decentralized control, but also have the ability to do top-down syndication. And what I mean by that is if you're creating content at the national level, you have the ability to push it down to your regional chapters and say, hey, here's something we created at national. Feel free to reappropriate this as needed and share it with your team. This will give them the opportunity of having some pre-built content that they may not have the creative resources to do themselves, but also gives them the ability to send it to their list, maybe changing the tone to reflect their community and getting it out to a broader audience and getting them more and more engagement locally. Also, build a coalition of giving. If you've got some partner organizations that you're working with, consider doing a joint appeal. Get them to send out an appeal on your behalf to their list, and then after that's completed, do an appeal for them. Now, this is very different from a list swap. I did see some questions initially in the preliminary questions from yesterday that asked about list swaps. I do not recommend them as a general best practice. You're going to run afoul of canned spam issues. You're going to end up with higher than average unsubscribes, and overall it's going to kill your inbox placement. What you're much better off doing is working with a partner organization that has a similar mission to yours, that isn't necessarily a competitor, but that you can reach out to and say, hey, we'd love to reach out to your list. Can you send one or two emails on our behalf to your list explaining who we are, how we work with you, and send them a link to one of our donation pages. Now, for those people who do convert via that initial email, you'll have them in your list. They'll be opted into your list. They'll clearly say that, hey, we're interested in what you're doing. We've got some buy-in. We want to hear more about you. They're going to be a much warmer lead for you than somebody that's just off of a general acquired list. Now, I should specify that this is related just to the email list world. In the direct mail world, there are still plenty of opportunities for you to acquire lists. That's part of the acquisition model. It's expensive but necessary. Pamela knows a lot more about that, and I'm sure during our Q&A she can answer questions related to that. But when it comes to online list building, you don't want to do the swaps. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about segmenting and scoring your list out. This is going to help out. Once you've got this list built up, you want to get the most out of it. It's great if you have 100,000 people on your list, but if you don't know anything about them, you're not really taking advantage of that list to its fullest extent. You want to make sure that you're sending the right message to the right person. This is going to help you with your open rates, your click-through rates, and lower your opt-outs. So that means segmenting by issues. People that have told you, hey, this is what I'm interested in hearing about. These are the things that I want to know more about. These are the things that I'm interested in helping your organization with. You know, so let your supporters say, yes, I care about advocacy. I care about fundraising appeals. I want to know more about events in my area. I want to volunteer. Let them tell you what that is and use that for your segmentation. Also consider segmenting via geography. If you're an organization that covers a pretty broad territory, knowing who's involved in which major cities in your territory is really helpful if you're going to be doing regional events that people want to come to. You may also want to look at previous history, things that people have done based on gift size, things like that. You can also look at tagging. This is kind of a subset of segmentation. It allows you to track people not just into groups, but also just general tags. Maybe you want to find people that were all updated at the same time, or maybe that all came from the same upload from a canvassing event that you've done. You want to be able to track for ROI on specific acquisitions. Here's a great place to do that. Scoring is similar, but I think takes things to a little bit higher level. What you're going to be doing on the scoring front is really looking more at seeing an organization's value over time. You want to see how engaged they are. You want to see how clean their list is. You want to make sure that you've got some of this relates back to segmentation, but you really want to assess the value of the supporter in greater detail. Now, when it comes to scoring, let me dive into that a little bit deeper here. What I'm talking about here is assigning a value to your supporters on factors related to activity, on factors related to the time since the last activity, and sometimes some other more nebulous things. So, for example, you may want to say, okay, for someone who has opened an email for me, I want to give them a score increase of maybe 5 points. For people who have signed a petition, I want to get an extra 25 points. For people who have volunteered a certain number of hours or have made a $100 donation, I want to give them an increase of 500 or 1,000 points so that you can start to see over time who that valuable supporter is. And they're going to be able to acquire those points in a lot of different ways, showing their real value. So maybe you're going to have some people that aren't major donors, but they've given you 100 hours of volunteer time in just the last quarter alone. You want to know who those people are and engage them and, again, move them up the ladder of engagement. Maybe there are people who have signed a ton of petitions, who have come to an event, who have never made a donation. Now it's the time to ask. Maybe there are people who are donors but have never signed a petition for you, never opened an email. You want to find out who those people are and figure out what makes them tick so that you can reach out to them more effectively. You may also want to look at scoring over time. So say, how long has it been since the last time I heard from them? Maybe they were super active in the 2012 election season, but I haven't heard from them since. That may be someone that needs a quick re-engagement email. Maybe there's somebody who was really, really active for a time, but then stopped donating for you 2 years ago. That's where things like Libund reports and Cybund reports, where you're looking for donations that happened last year but not this, or some year but not this, really come in handy because you can say, you know, this person used to be a good high-value donor, but for whatever reason, I haven't heard from them in 2 years. Hopefully you never get to that point, but sometimes people fall through the cracks. Those are the kind of people that you want to find, score, and find out who they are so that you can reach out individually and say, what's going on here? We thought we were doing some great work. What have we done? What can we do to get you reengaged? Now, you also may want to look at scoring them via things that are less related to activity and time since activity. You may want to look at what their role is at specific organizations. You may have somebody that you're trying to score, and maybe they're not highly engaged, but they are the director of corporate giving at an organization in town that you really want to bring on board. Maybe there's someone who is really highly involved at some organization that you want to talk about being on the board. Maybe there's someone who always gives you a great in-kind gift every year but has not really done much as far as cash donations. And you want to find out who those people are and say, okay, maybe these aren't people who are going to be major donors for us, but these are clearly people who care about us and who want to give in some form or fashion. Maybe we can get them on the volunteer list as well. So there's a lot you can do here with these supporters on the segmentation and scoring front because at the end of the day, yes, I want to help you grow your list. But once you have that list grown, you really have to know what to do with it. So there's a lot that you can do with these lists. I would encourage you never to stop analyzing your list, never to stop testing, never to stop going forward and figuring out what more you can be doing to engage with your supporters. Stick with that donor-focused fundraising approach, and you're going to do great work. With that, I am going to end my section of the speech, and let's see if we can go out and have some questions.
All right. We've covered quite a bit of ground today. We've got about 10 minutes left, so with that, let's take some questions from the audience. First one, how often is too often to send mailings and email donation requests?
So what I typically say on that front is, and I got this from Penelope Burke when I was fundraising several years ago. is you really want to take a look at making sure you're getting 5 or 6 touch points in between each ask. Now, that means that you're going to have that initial appeal. You're going to have that initial thank you letter. You're probably going to follow up with them afterwards and just say, hey, wanted to let you know that gift is going to do some good. Here's some stuff about our email list. Here's some stuff about an event in your area. But you don't want to make the supporter feel like all they are is an ATM machine. You want them to have some level of engagement. So make sure that you're engaging regularly in between. I think 5 to 6, maybe 7 touch points in between asks is a good rule of thumb. But I think really it's more about the feel. You want to make sure that you're engaging with them, that they feel like they are important to you in ways other than just from their wallet. But don't be afraid to make that ask again. Once they've already given, they're clearly supporting you, and I think they will be willing to give again, assuming that the relationship is solid.
And David, I would add that there's many organizations that send out monthly appeals or even 14, 15 appeals a year, as well as mm-hmm. email. And those can be very, very successful. It's really a matter of testing into what your list is going to, kind of what's the tipping point for your list. A lot of it is list demographics plays into that. But also, the big thing I would caution is make sure you don't have an all or nothing policy where when somebody says you send me too much mail, you take them off any mail. I like to see a variety of options where you can offer the donor basically what I call a step-down process where, okay, well, would you rather just get our mail once a quarter? Oh, that's still too much. Okay, what about once every 2 years plus our newsletters or something like that so that you have alternates other than all or nothing because you've worked hard to acquire these donors. You want to stay in touch with them. And so I just don't feel there's a real rule about how often you should connect them or contact them because I know so many successful organizations contacting their donors, what some of you would just consider a hideous amount of time. And yet, now I'm not a proponent of this at all, but one organization I give to contacts me on average every 10 days. I think that's a little too much, frankly. And I'm only a $25 donor. But they have figured out, it's a huge nonprofit, they have obviously figured out that works for their demographics.
Now, Pamela, you mentioned that there were kind of no rules to as far as how often you send your mailings or email donation requests. But what about the rules for actually acquiring emails to add to your list? Is it ethical and okay to find people's emails and add them without asking them first?
Take it away, David.
I would say that's a bad idea. Now, if you're finding emails from some sort of valid third party, where, like I mentioned, where you're doing an append on your direct mail approach, I think that's worth looking out and finding. But if you're going to do that, you want to make sure that you're following up immediately with a single opt-in, if not a double opt-in, to confirm that they are legitimately interested in getting your emails. If you start going to a point where you're just going online and saying, I really wish so-and-so at this organization was on my list. I found their email address on their corporate website, so I'm just going to add them. That could end up getting you in trouble down the line. The other thing that could end up hurting you is if you're going through a shady email acquisition service and it's a list that isn't vetted properly, you're going to run the list of having emails on that list that we in the industry refer to, as honeypots, that are emails that are going to trick, that are meant to trick you. They are old expired email addresses that the email service providers reactivate and look at spam traps. They want to be able to see, hey, I know this email address isn't invalid, so now that this is on somebody's email list, clearly somebody bought this somewhere. What that ends up doing is if you get a couple of those on your list, your ESP is going to blacklist you or worse, shut off your email entirely. And now you're scrambling to find an alternative and are running out of ways to communicate with your list entirely because of one bad decision. So I would rather say find them through legitimate means. Let people give that list to you. It's okay to ask for their email address. It's okay to get it from appeal swap, but don't go acquiring email addresses without knowing where they came from.
Now, shifting gears a little bit away from email, Pamela, this might be a good one for you. What's the best way to strategize to get major donors via acquisition, or how do you get your foot in the door with big corporations with philanthropic tendencies?
Okay, I think the best way to, you know, you're going, it's hard to just go out and say we're going to acquire major donors, because you have to cultivate, for the most part, major donors have to be cultivated over time. But a couple of things you can do, first of all, on your prospecting side, you can use a service that does modeling and basically say, here's our major donors. Can you find me more names we can rent that look like those same major donors? And they use algorithms. It's all very scientific. But you'll get back a list of people that have a higher propensity to become major donors than if you just rented a list of subscribers to a magazine or donors to a cause or whatever. The other thing you can do is when you bring people into your through your acquisition program, you can do a back-end scoring process using a service like Wealth Engine or another one that basically you pump your names to them, and they run them through, you know, computer programs 9 ways to Sunday and will come out and tell you these people look like they're good candidates for something like a planned gift, and these people have major donor propensity. Now, just because they have major donor propensity, obviously you have to cultivate them and convince them that where they want to give their major gift is to you. But those are a couple of things either on the front end before you do acquisition or on the back end, so you can find those people who you want to then put more effort into cultivating, possibly make sure they get a phone call, that somebody contacts them, starts building that relationship. It maybe invites them to see your program in action or whatever. And what was the second half of the question again, Sean?
Just involving big corporations with philanthropic tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest deal is that you need to know what they're looking for. They all have a lot, or not all, but most of them have a lot of requirements. They have to have a company or a branch in your city or whatever it is. And you want to, first of all, read those very, very carefully. And then you're going to want to see, you know, obviously, first step is, do we fit the bill? And then secondly, going beyond that, you want to, do you know somebody that works for that corporation? Do you have a volunteer or a board member, an employee or a recipient, someone that can help you get your foot in the door? That is such an area that depends very heavily on kind of who knows who. And you also, so you need to, also, though, have in your mind, what can we give to this organization, this corporation, rather, that they need? What do we have to give? And that may be a service opportunity, or that may be, frankly, good PR. So you need to be thinking not only about what can they give us, but what can we give them?
All right, and it looks like we've got time for maybe one more question. We'll try to squeeze it in here. David, what are the rules for email signups? If someone makes a donation, after sending them email thanks and follow-up, can you put them on your weekly e-news list?
You can. I would just make sure that on your initial donation page, you have a checkbox that indicates that that's what you want to do. It's very easy to add on most donation platforms. And beyond that, what I would do is give them more than just one option. So let them say, yes, I want to join your email news list, but may give them two or three others saying, actually, I'd rather hear more about volunteering opportunities or events in my area or, you know, other ways of getting involved, so that they can tell you specifically what kind of email they want to get. Give them that in addition to the general email list, and that way you're giving them a little bit of control. And also, by knowing what they're interested in, you're going to actually increase your open rates, your conversion rates, because they're telling you, look, I really don't care about your advocacy emails. I'm never going to open those. But if you have something going on in my area, yes, let me know. That's the kind of stuff I'm interested in. So once they've given you that email address on the donation form, as long as you have the language on the form that says, hey, you know, I want to add you to my email list, you're fine. Once they're in, you're welcome to email them as much as you want. Just be aware of their sensitivity to your volume of emails. Testing is key. If you're looking at your emails and you're seeing a spike in your unsubscribe rates, that may be an indication that you're sending content that people don't care about or that you're sending it too frequently. That area of how much is too much is different for every organization. I work with some really large organizations that email out 3-4 times a week every time there's an action alert. I have other organizations that may only hit you once a month and may go completely dormant if the state legislator is out of session because they've got no advocacy actions to push toward. So it really does depend on your org, and you're going to be able to find the sweet spot pretty easily once those emails start going out and you start seeing those unsubscribe and spam rates.
All right. Well,
and Sean, can I add something very quickly? And that is that there's a lot of questions that came in before the webinar and during the webinar that we haven't answered. And I have a column that usually is every Thursday in Nonprofit Pro, and there's information on your screen about that. I will make an attempt to answer the questions within the next few weeks in my column, the ones that I have the background answer.
All right, well, that will just about do it for today. On behalf of Nonprofit Pro and Salsa Labs, I want to thank everybody for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. If you would take just a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we would be grateful, and your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. I hope to see all of you at the next Nonprofit Pro webinar. Thanks, everybody.